Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 34. Brahmaner, Kshatra, Bandur, He, Brahmaner, Kshatra, Bandur, He, Griha, Palo, Nirupita, Griha, Palo, Nirupita, Sa, Katam, Tadgrihe, Dva, sta, sakatam tadrihi vasya, sabrandam, boktam, arhati, sadbadam, boktam, arhati, brahmaner kshatra bandurhi, Griha palo nirupita, sakatam tadgrihe dvastya, sambandam boktam arhati, brahmaner kshatra bandurhi, griha palo nirupita, Sakatam tadgrihe dvanstra sambandam boktam arhati brahmaner kshatra bandur I griha palo norupita sakatam tadgrihe dvastya Sambandam boktam arhati. Ladies. Brahmana, by the Brahminical order, Kshatra Bandur, the sons of the Kshatriyas. He certainly, Grihapala, the watchdog, Nirupita, designated, Sa, he, Katam, on what grounds? Tadgrihe, in the home of him, the master. Dvasta, keeping at the door. Sabandam, in the same pot. Boktum, to eat. Arhati, deserves. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, as they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? Please repeat. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designed as watchdogs, designated as, thank you, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? Purport. The inexperienced Brahmin boy certainly knew that the king asked for water from his father, and his father did not respond. He tried to explain away his father's inhospitality in an impertinent manner befitting an uncultured boy. He was not at all sorry for the king's not being well received. On the contrary, he justified the wrong act in a way characteristic of the Brahmana, of Brahmanas of Kali Yuga. He compared the king to a watchdog, and so it was wrong for the king to enter the house of a Brahmana and ask for water from the same pot. The dog is certainly reared by the master, but that does not mean that the dog shall claim to dine and drink from the same pot. The mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order. And we can see that in the beginning it was started by the inexperienced son of a Brahmana. As the dog is never allowed to enter within the room and hearth, although it is reared by the master, similarly, according to Sringi, the king had no right to enter the house of Shanaka Rishi. According to the Samiki Rishi, according to the boy's opinion, the king was on the wrong side and not his father, and thus he justified his silent father. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? So the theme that's basically running through this whole purport here is summed up. Where is it here? The mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order. We are all familiar with the third Sikshastika prayer, Trinad Api Sunichenan Tarod Api Sahishnana Amani Namana Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari. We all know it, and we all chant it. And if Shanaka, Sringi, this boy, the son here, if he had actually understood that mentality, then this whole exchange that's going on with his father, he would have probably handled a little bit differently. But he didn't. And it's interesting how Prabhupada is using the word befitting an uncultured boy. We generally see in the world today, we tend to refer to the young teenagers. Whoops, we're getting signals here. Is that better? We tend to refer to our teenage children as, you know, we have so many terms, but we know there's a period of time when we go from childhood through adolescence. The mentality and the growth of the brain becomes such a thing that we start thinking we actually know so much. I know I've heard many times, actually my mother said it when I first went off to college. She said, I thought I knew so much when I went into college, and it wasn't until I came out when I realized I knew so little. So this is a typical mentality of an adolescent. As their brain cells start developing and they become more intelligent, they start realizing they have some ability to reason and think, and then they get a little bit too far ahead of themselves. So frequently we see young people doing extremely foolish things, not realizing, in some cases, maybe how really dangerous it is for them to do those foolish things. I think there's even a psychological term that's referred to as... it's something to the effect of they feel like they're invulnerable or they can't be harmed. And it's not until we get older, and we see as we get older, people be going, no, I'm not going to do that. That could be dangerous. That could cause so many difficulties and so many problems. But unfortunately, Sringi did not have, he was too young at this point in his life, he didn't have that kind of insight. And so he very quickly and prematurely just basically started... literally cursing out the king because he had come to his father's hermitage and because he hadn't actually really stopped to consider his proper situation as just a young boy in this kingdom. And so what did he do? He cursed Maharaj Prickett, which, of course, we understand in a way that was actually a blessing for all of us, which then led to the whole exchange where we now have the Srimad Bhagavatam narrated for us. But from his point of view, he was acting extremely foolishly. The analogy is also given here in the verse. It's actually referring to the king should be the watchdog. And in a way, the king is the watchdog. The king's duty is actually to make sure that society is geared in such a way that everybody will continue to develop in their own Krishna consciousness. This is actually an extremely controversial situation nowadays because, to the best of my knowledge, we're actually suggesting and teaching to the greater society that this concept of separation of church and state is a bad concept. Our concept is, no, church should be the head of state. And everybody will then therefore have a understanding of what their position is, and they will mature in their Krishna consciousness because the state will facilitate it. Unfortunately, what we have today is the state is facilitating just the opposite. They're facilitating, you know, and it's a whole cascading problem, a cascade of problems, because they don't really have the proper knowledge to run things. A good example is the lottery. The lottery is, we understand the lottery is a form of gambling. But why do they have the lottery? It's not because they want to, you know, not necessarily because they want to encourage gambling, but they use the lottery to subsidize funding, I believe, for the schools and maybe some other things. So whether they're doing it for what reason or another, maybe they're trying to justify it or rationalize it by saying, well, we're using it for the school. But why aren't they managing the school funds properly so they don't have to have a lottery in order to support them? So this is all kind of crazy backwards Kali Yuga thinking. Same thing with the liquor stores. All of the four things that we're trying to encourage people to get away from, the government tends to sort of turn a blind eye to it. And just says, well, that's okay. Let the people do what they want. That's our concept of freedom in America. Just let everybody run wild and do whatever they want. So in this case, Maharaj Sringi is really not appreciating the fact that King Prickett was actually an extraordinary leader. And admittedly, King Prickett actually, if I understand correctly, when he went back to his... king back to the palace after he left the village where he had put the snake around the sage, he had a insight, he had introspection, and he went, I don't know if that was a good idea. I made a mistake. And he went back to try to rectify that mistake, And there was some discussion there. So he had the realization. And then, of course, by that time, Sringi's father actually came out of his trance, and he was going, well, what's going on here? And he was talking to Sringi about it also. And he said, what did you do? You did what? Oh, that was a big mistake. What you did, thinking it was on my behalf, that was a big mistake. And so he also was approaching. I believe they were both coming to apologize. They were both coming to apologize at the same time. My son did a terrible thing. No, I did a terrible thing. So this is actually the mentality of true mature souls, not the kind of thing that's being suggested in this purport here of an uncultured boy. And unfortunately, we see a lot of this in the world today. It's almost a it's a direct symptom of the Kali Yuga mentality. I think we've all experienced in our exchanges of Krishna consciousness with people who may not know much about it, or we get into some philosophical discussion. I know this has happened to me several times, and you get to a point in the conversation where you say something, and you can tell they don't know how to respond. They're stuck. And they'll just go, well, I don't care what you say. I'm going to believe whatever I want anyway. The concept of actually surrendering, and we're not talking about surrendering to the now or some strange concept like that, which is really kind of vague and you really don't have any choice anyway. We're talking about surrendering the false ego that causes the kind of mistakes that Sringi did, which is I'm full of myself. I really know what I'm doing, and my dad's been insulted. I don't care if he's the king. He should stay outside because he's the watchdog. He's not supposed to come in here. When actually the king, if he's the king, my understanding is he can pretty much go and do whatever he wants, and everybody gets out of the way. Yet someone or other Sringi's thinking, no, you can't do that to my dad. So this is a real problem, especially in Kali Yuga. Everybody is so proud. That's why I said the first thing Prabhupada mentioned here, or the first thing I mentioned, is the mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order. And it shows up everywhere. False pride shows up everywhere. If you think about it, it motivates people to do all sorts of things. The Guinness Book of World Record is basically the Guinness Book of false pride. People doing some of the most ridiculous, silly, jumping on a pogo stick for 4 days or whatever it is. And there's a whole litany of things people do just to get their name in the Guinness Book of World Records, which is completely uselessly meaningless in terms of developing your consciousness to a higher stage. And some of those things really do require a tremendous amount of austerity, but it's austerity in the mode of ignorance. Total ignorance, because in the end, it really doesn't do you any good. So that's what this whole verse is all about. False pride. And making the assumption that we know what's going on when we maybe don't know, have a clue what's going on. So an example of that is a man gets on the train and he's sitting there peacefully reading his book. And he sees a mother get on the train with her 2 or 3 kids. And he's trying to peacefully read his book. And, of course, the kids are just going ballistic. They're bouncing off the walls and screaming and yelling and running up and down the car and just becoming a total nuisance, making it really very difficult for him to read. And he's sitting there and he's patiently waiting. And it just continues. It just goes on and on. And he just finally can't stand it anymore. So he walks over to the lady and he says, could you please discipline your children? Of course, he's making the assumption that she's a bad mother and the kids are just out of control, which is, considering the way things are in the world today, you can't really blame the guy too much for that. But then the mother kind of looks at him and kind of goes, oh, I'm very, very sorry. I'm just trying to figure out. We're on the way to the hospital, and I have to tell my children that their father just died. And he went, ooh. She was in a whole different world trying to figure out how she was going to tell her children that their father just died. And that's what her meditation was. And he's sitting there thinking she's just some kind of a reckless mother. So this concept of jumping to conclusions is a byproduct of an overly active mind. when we actually become a little bit mature, instead of just assuming somebody's doing something, they're doing that against me, or they're trying to make me look like a fool, or they're trying to do something that I don't agree with, or whatever it is. It's always a good idea to kind of check in with that person and find out what maybe they're actually doing, why they're doing what they're doing. Now, in the case of this situation with Marge Prickett putting the snake around the neck of the sage, we find, again, Sringi is basically overstepping his boundaries, going beyond what he really had the privilege, we'll say, or the proper etiquette. It's strange because you would think his father was a great Brahmin, and you would think that he trained him up adequately enough to not do such a foolish thing. But within that little fact right there is a whole nother lesson within itself, which is we see in the world today some parents are very good parents and their kids are just recklessly out of control. And in other cases, we see sometimes the parents are recklessly out of control, maybe suffering from all sorts of drugs or intoxication or whatever it is. And somehow the child has the presence of mind. I have to admit, though, I don't think this is very common. Usually in a situation like that, children can be extremely damaged and have all sorts of psychological problems and difficulties as they grow up. But there are examples of people who somehow or another, by the grace of God, they were able to realize that my parents weren't right, and I can't use that as an excuse for my own shortcomings. Some people actually use that as a catalyst to really excel, to become somebody extraordinary. Sometimes I think it's safe to say they may be doing it for the wrong reasons. And if they don't have Krishna consciousness, and if they're not maturing themselves in a way where they're building, you know, respect for the four principles of civilized life, and learning how to actually respect God, come to the temple, offer their obeisances, respect other great Vaishnavas, then again we sort of fall into that loop of, you know, useless time wasting, which goes on for maybe many, 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 many lives. But the point is that what I'm trying to get at here is that you can be a very good parent, and somehow or another the situation is such that the child doesn't turn out so nicely. And there's all sorts of, you know, we could go into all sorts of explanations regarding the karmic effect and what the child was in a previous life and what the parent was in a previous life and how these things happen. It's very difficult. You know, we get into trouble when we try to disassemble the laws of karma in our little brains, try to figure out how karma actually works. But we have some sense of the fact that when you see a situation that just doesn't look right, it just doesn't fit. If parents, in this case, he probably trained his son pretty well, and yet he made this ridiculously silly blunder. So these are all examples that we can learn from and maybe take a little bit hard at it, because sometimes we might beat ourselves up too much. When we really are doing the best we can possibly do. I mean, not just children. I mean, people that we work with, people that are in our lives, the neighbor next door, or somebody you have, for some reason or other, you have some reason to have to engage with that person, the landlord, whatever it is. And you're doing the best you possibly can, and it's still not working out. Or you're going like, why? What am I doing wrong here? There is a good element in asking that question. And it's a healthy question to ask before we then take the next step and compound the problem, escalate the problem. The best way to deal, at least my experience in the world at 60 some odd years, is to try to always, suppress or negate or nullify whatever the agitation is by not jumping on it and, you know, you can't say that to me. Yeah, well, I'm going to show you. And that becomes, that is a direct signal from the false ego. If we actually understand the Trinada Pisanichena clause, or that sloka, we realize that, no, okay, the guy's being a little rough, he's beating me up, whatever it is. But who am I anyway? Who am I to feel like I deserve all this attention, all this respect? If we actually really take that verse to heart, it kind of really changes the whole way we interface with the world. not something that we just chant because we know it's the appropriate thing to say, but actually try to, you know, embed it within the way we look at the world and the way we deal with the world. Some guy cuts you off on the freeway. I mean, it's a classic example. We always talk about it. You know, that initial anger may be there because it may be a dangerous event, and you're going, oh, my gosh, that wasn't real smart. But to take it personally, that's a whole other step into the well of being entangled in the material world. That's not something worth, you know, getting into a big conflict about. And actually, if you think about it, probably most of the conflicts people get into is because this concept of false ego. There are accidents. I'm not trying to minimize or trivialize that. But if you think about it, lots of times conflicts come up because two people are just too boldly arrogant to stop, pull back and stop. So the mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall in the perfect social order. Not just the perfect social order, all social orders. There's so many things. If you really stop and look, if you see somebody doing something and stop and pull back from it and think about it a little bit, say, why are they doing that? Why are they, you know, spending, you know, I'm always amazed at, like, the Olympics. And don't get me wrong, there's some really nice things. Olympic sports, although we don't necessarily encourage it so much, I know in my own life, when I was younger, some of the sports that I did engage in taught me disciplines that served me very well later in life. You know, the discipline of pushing yourself more than my track coach used to always say, your body can do a lot more than your mind will allow it. You could do a lot more. Coaches are good. And ultimately, our relationship with our spiritual master is our spiritual coach is saying, you can do a lot more than what you're thinking you can do. But if that message won't get through, if we have this false pride and we don't want to listen, or we think, oh, no, no, he doesn't understand, I'm really... No, no, if we actually surrender to the spiritual master, then we don't... That wall of resistance goes away. That's what surrender is really about. Not, like I said earlier, surrendering to some vague concept, oh, I'm going to surrender to the now. Okay, good luck with that. There's nothing challenging in there. There's nothing pushing it. This is the whole New Age movement is based on this concept. Because there's nothing challenging in there. The Hare Krishna movement does something that nobody else, or at least, I shouldn't say nobody else, but we do it probably more with focus than any other group, at least that I'm aware of, is we have certain standards. These are the standards. You really need to try to understand these standards, and you really need to try to integrate them into your life because they will pay off in great dividends. But you have to make that effort. It's not like you just come into our temple and you say, yeah, put a donation in the donation box and do whatever you want. We don't push any principles off on you. Just do whatever. Which is what I believe a lot of these other organizations and current philosophies in the world today are doing. And people go, yeah, go over there. You don't have to do anything. Just go in and put a donation in the donation box and they'll tell you you're God and everything's cool. But not here. No, no, no. The first thing we say and the first thing the sages have taught is that as human beings, how can you know anything? Which is totally flies in the face of what's current in the world today, where people are all, you know, just sitting and I'm going to be inspired by the light. No, you have four flaws. The propensity to make mistakes, the propensity to fall under illusion. You have imperfect senses and you have the propensity to cheat. That's where spiritual life begins. When you really get that, oh my gosh, when you really get that, that's when you realize, how can I figure anything out? How can I figure anything out at all? And that's what the concept of surrender is. You go, I mean, it really is, anybody wants to make some other suggestions, I'm hoping to hear it, but right now the only ones that I see is either you really think you can figure it out, or you were really in trouble and nobody's ever going to figure anything out. And the way that we resolve that conflict is we approach a spiritual master who actually has real knowledge based on the studies of the Vedic literatures, which we understand were handed down by the Supreme Lord himself through Vedavyasa. And he's a master in those literatures, and he's not speculating, he's not making it up. He's not sitting there meditating and, I decided today that blah, 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 blah. No. But the beginning of spiritual life, at least for me, I this has been my experience. I mean, that was the main thing when I first came into contact with Srila Prabhupada's books and I was studying this and I was reading. And the devotees would say, nope, you got four flaws. And I'd go home and say, well, what about this? I can figure it out. Like, no, no, no. And I had my brain working overtime trying to figure out how to get around that. No. I don't need to surrender. I don't need to. Because blah, blah, blah. And then, but every time I went down that road, I found myself coming to the point where I had to say, yeah, you're cheating yourself. You're lying. And I had to finally come to the point where I say, yeah, there's no way to get around that argument. And yet, in my preaching in Ojai and so forth, it's astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing the kind of ridiculous things people say just off the top of their head. One experience I had at a program, not, you know, within the last year or two, or maybe 2 years ago, we went to a program. This is what I do in Ohio. I go around, I kind of poke my nose in other people's business, and I sort of see what they're teaching, and I kind of go, yeah, do people really believe this? Holy smokes. You know, it really gives you an appreciation for what Prabhupada's given us. So we went to one program, and in the beginning of the program, they asked everybody to go around and say something, and, you know, it was supposed to be an inquiry into reality or something like that. And so I said, when it came to my turn, I said, well, you know, I'm here, I'm kind of really curious to hear how everybody in this room gets over these four flaws. Because, you know, that's what I'd like to talk about. And there was about 30 or 40 people in the room. And, of course, it went around the room. And then when the open conversation dialogue began, I could tell that 80% of the people in the room, it just went right over their head. Nothing registered at all. It was like they were totally blacked out to that concept. You make mistakes. You have the propensity to cheat. Your senses are imperfect, and you fall into illusion. Yeah, well, I know how I can figure it out. Blah, blah. I sit every day for 20 minutes or whatever it is. Okay, you completely went right over their head. Except for one or two people. And when we went around at the end of the program, they said, okay, everybody, we're going to go around the circle again, and we're going to share what we got from the exchange after an hour and a half of blah, 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 people saying all sorts of silly things. But there was one person who actually, you could see during the course of the conversation, this person was trying to actually deal with the question that I put on the table. They were saying things like, well, what do you define as a mistake? Because there's this concept out there that everything's God's divine will. There are no mistakes. Everything's happening just the way it's supposed to be. So there's no definition of a mistake, because that's not a mistake either. That's God's will. So they were trying to push this concept. What's a mistake? And I just said, well, you know, if you go into the kitchen and you put your pie in the oven and you burn it, that's a mistake. And they're, you'd see their brain started going off again. So at the end of this whole exchange, and we did our closing statement, so to speak, this person was towards the end. And you could see it was just tearing her up. And she finally blurted out. She said, I know I don't make any mistakes. I know I don't make any mistakes. Because I don't exist. That's what they said. And I went, oh boy. This is what we're up against, by the way. This kind of mentality is what we're up against. This vague, mishmash kind of stuff that goes through people's heads. I mean, you can't even begin sometimes. I mean, all the Sankirtan devotees are way ahead of me on this one. There's some people you just can't begin. You just, okay, have a nice day. Go live in your little weird illusionary world. We're not even going to try to penetrate that wall. So What do we go to, 8:30? Is that right? 20 after? Okay. Questions now. Would you like to ask a question? Bring a potty. There you go. You have to be patient, Bigger Buddy. All right. You don't get the microphone unless you're a junior. I don't see any other questions. Bigger Buddy has a question. Let him ask.
Yeah, thank you for an amazing class at no minute's notice.
I was just thrown into this, so forgive me if I'm not doing a good job.
I have a question about the subject in general. How did Sringi get that kind of power? I mean, I've heard Prabhupada say in lectures about the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, they're born with mystic powers.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so here's this boy Sringi, okay, and he's able to curse somebody.
Right.
For real.
Right.
Okay. So is that something that a power that he was born with because he was born of a Vedic Brahmin? Or is that something his father taught him? Is it a technique? How did he get that kind of power that, as a 5-year-old boy? And it's mentioned in the purport, at least yesterday's purport, that he was immature,
right,
that he wasn't of good character, mm-hmm, his character wasn't developed yet. Mm-hmm. So how does a boy, a 5-year-old boy, have that kind of power that he... Oh, okay.
Whatever. He's
young.
That's irrelevant. He's
whatever
young
he was,
boy.
5, 10. When, he was young. He was.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So
I would agree with these. Typical teenager.
Where does he get that power from?
Well, we have that saying that austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins, and it's a fact. I mean, I was saying a little earlier with the Olympics. I actually didn't finish that point. It's true in all the different branches of the Olympics, but particularly you see sometimes these, 3 or 4-year-old young girls, and they're learning how to, flip over and land on a balance beam and, do these amazing things. This is a good example of how, when you're about 30 or 40 years old, you realize how terribly dangerous that is, and you'd never do it. But when you're 3 or 4 years old, you just, go do it. And here's another example. The parents, their false ego, my child's going to flip over 3 times and jump off that balance beam and land on her feet, and she's going to win the World Olympics in gymnastics. So the point is that they spend lots and lots of time. I don't know how many hundreds of hours, but these people are people that are at that level of competence are doing tremendous austerities. Of course, again, there are austerities in the mode of ignorance. But it is possible. I mean, I'm trying to answer the question in a way that sort of makes some philosophical sense, that he did do a lot of austerities. He was the son of a Brahmin. But somehow or another, this is where this concept, just a second, this is where the concept comes in of, there may be a lot more going on in the background that we're not aware of. I think Judah Karma wants to add something.
I gave the class yesterday, and I recollect from the purport it said that Sringi, he had the birth and the training, and therefore he had the power. So he apparently did have the training.
Right, and also we know, we use the example all the time. A knife can be very nicely used to cut veggies for the offering to the deities, but it can also be used to cut somebody's head off. So he had the training, but whether he had the intelligence to properly use that training, free will. We have the free will. We can use it appropriately. We can use it inappropriately. We got 2 people here. And I caught my first. Nikotma wanted to say something. We're trying to go in democratic
order. Prabhupada explained in that purport that it was by birth and training, but he lacked culture. That was his. That was his issue.
Or he had teenage culture. I think.
Ultimately, all power comes from Krishna.
Yeah.
Ultimately, all power comes from Krishna, and he can withdraw that power at any moment, as we see with Arjuna and so many others.
Exactly.
And in the yogic situation, we know the yogis, they practice strict discipline, and they're guided in certain ways, so they develop these mystic powers. Prabhupada even said he experienced. They come down from the mountains, they bewilder people, they take what they want, they go back.
Right.
So, but Krishna can withdraw that power at any moment, because otherwise you can misuse it, just like those yogis. Somebody gave a class recently and said very nicely that after many, many years of developing yogi powers, you become an expert thief. You can reach Afghanistan and take a pomegranate that doesn't belong to you.
Right.
So what's the use? So yes, you can develop all kinds of powers by yoga practice, by being a brahmana or whatever, but if it's not guided, as you said, by principles, by Krishna consciousness, then it's just a waste of time.
Right. Did you want to say? The free will is always there to be used properly and improperly.
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. Very stimulating. Didn't put me to sleep for sure.
That's good.
Anybody else? I just wanted to... Is that okay? Yeah, so I just wanted to make one point. And that is a point that Srila Prabhupada makes several times within the course of this chapter, especially in the purports. And that is that Sringi did what he did, actually, because it was part of a divine plan. The divine plan was that if Sringi hadn't done what he had done, then there would not have been a curse. And then if there wasn't a curse, then King Pariksit might not have gone back home, back to Godhead immediately. This was a quick 7-day program and then gone. That was the first thing. And the second thing is that the world would not have had the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the so-called explanation of everything that that Lord Krishna came to expound and to help us understand. Because that question comes, well, what happened when Lord Krishna left and he killed all the demons and he expounded a great philosophy? Well, what was left is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which teaches us exactly all the things that we need to do to make a perfect society, to make perfect human beings, and to make happy human beings, fulfilled human beings. So, therefore, we need not speculate about Sringi. Sringi had to do what he did because it was God's plan.
Right.
And that's the exact words that Prabhupada uses. So therefore, even though he may know, in fact not may, but I think he clearly knew that what he was doing was wrong, but at the moment he did not know it was wrong because he had to do what was right according to Krishna.
Right.
And therefore it fulfilled so many things.
Right. Yeah, we have that saying, not a blade of grass without the will of God. Everything ultimately, you know, the five causes of action, and the last one is super soul. I mean, we can make all our arrangements, but if Krishna doesn't want it, forget it. Yeah, that's true. Right. Good point. We can always find excuses for our own foolishness. Okay, I think is that it? We got one or two more minutes if anybody has anything. I guess not. Sure.
Hold on, wait for the mic. So everybody can...
We've got two or three more minutes.
The mic, then they don't hear the
if we stay formally. Go ahead. It works.
What is the...
It's working.
When you know you're fighting with demonic powers hidden behind people's actions and people's characters, and you start feeling weaker and weaker, and in your human actions you start failing and your body starts being so exhausted that you don't even have any prana in you left, and you keep on struggling, but you can't. And then somebody dies because of that, and you're responsible. So what happens to that soul? What can I do? I know I was wrong because my ego actually was at times higher, and that's me. But I was fighting, and I felt I had no strength, and I couldn't even pray anymore.
It sounds like you experienced some pretty traumatic thing, which we want to respect that. But at the same time, at least the way I deal with things like that is I try to pull back from it. I mean, the simple reality is you can't wind the clock backwards. So what you have to do is just start with that. You can't wind the clock backwards, but what you can do is try to learn from whatever that experience was and really go deeply into it. And it sounds like you've done this a little bit. You've looked at your own, maybe I could have handled this differently, that differently. When you're hanging around or you're associating with people who have what you might refer to as strong demoniac forces, the general rule of thumb that I would encourage people to do is back away from it. Get away from it. And maybe that's the lesson there. Don't, you know, if you're hanging around or you're associating or somehow impacted by the behaviors of other people that are not very elevated in consciousness, it's almost a given that there will be all sorts of problematic situations that will revolve around that, which is why we're trying to teach people higher consciousness, because it's impacting everybody, not just you. Everybody in the world's going through this. In some cases, people are having bombs dropped on their head because there's demoniac forces out there, and they don't understand whatever they're dropping the bombs for is probably not very, you know, it's not going to help really anything in the long run.
And if the person who left was evolved all his life, no matter of the body, what can I still do within those weeks after passing to myself?
I think the general thing would be to come to the temple and give your prayers to the deities. And try to do as much personal growth as you can on how you may or may not have been able to, or, you know, how much you could have maybe. The whole thing is to use these kind of experiences to see what can I learn from it? What can I grow from it? If you do that, then no matter what the situation is, again, you can't turn the clock back. But what you can do is try to draw as much out, and don't run away from it and don't hide from it. Try to actually go deeply into it. Not in a punitive way and not in a, you know, beat yourself up kind of a way, but just what's really there that will help me understand how to maybe prevent or avoid or not get so entangled in that situation. But the general rule of thumb, because you said something in the beginning about demoniac forces, the general rule of thumb is if you're hanging around with bad energy, it's going to rub off on you at some point. And which is why we're happy to see you here. You're obviously maybe a little bit new. We encourage you to keep coming. Our devotees will be very happy to keep training you and helping you lift your consciousness. Anyway, we only have another couple minutes here. I don't want to break the whatever it is, the pattern.
Based on what you just said, Prabhu, is a very important point. And that is, there are some devotees who are unaffected by these demoniac forces, and that's because they have a tremendous amount of divine force.
Yeah, yeah.
And that divine force is developed. It's built by association,
strength,
by practices, by prayer, by coming regularly to these. So when you build your own strength, then the people who have these tendencies to try to take you down, it bounces off, so to speak,
yeah,
because you're invulnerable to such things. So we have a responsibility to make ourselves as strong as possible through the aids of devotees, the aids of the Supreme Lord, the
right,
aids of the Supreme Spiritual Master.
And if you do the kind of discipline that we're both talking about here, Krishna will come up in your heart and he'll help find the resolution that you're looking for. You know, it may take a little time. Don't forget, you know, we've been doing all sorts of silly things for a real, real long, long time. Not only in this life, but who knows how many previous lives we've been doing the same bad behaviors. So it takes time for all these things to get cleared out. You're welcome. Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada.